are not ordinary men. Did you see that? He just said, get up and walk. And the lame man got up and walked. Ordinary men can't do that. I bet these guys are gods from heaven come down in human form. I'll bet they're Zeus and Hermes.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
In the original Ghostbusters movie, classic, right? A trio of ne'er-do-well paranormal investigators acquire sudden fame and find themselves confronting an evil force that threatens to plunge the world into darkness for centuries. When they finally stand face to face with this great evil, Gozer is the name of the evil, if anybody cares about all that, they kind of order the evil to get out of Dodge. And Gozer sneers at the group spokesman and says, "Are you a god?" And despite another Ghostbuster encouraging the spokesman to answer in the affirmative, the reflexive answer comes out, "Well, no." And Gozer shrieks, "Then die!" and blasts the Ghostbusters with supernatural power, nearly blasting them off the roof of a tall building. They narrowly escape death, and as they extricate themselves from the rubble, the lead Ghostbuster gives this advice to his fellows: when someone asks you if you're a god, you say, yes. In the big scheme of things, that's probably bad advice. You know, lots of men have wanted to be gods. Alexander the Great, Napoleon, I believe Adolf Hitler, these and others come to mind, and it never ends well. In fact, Adam and Eve originally sinned and fell from grace because they had an inordinate desire to climb onto the throne of God. There is only one God, and all worship is due Him, and all of our efforts to take His place end with disaster. Back to the book of Acts, ready now for chapter 14, which puts us officially halfway through the book. At the end of chapter 13, we found Paul and Barnabas in the midst of the first missionary journey, and we found that they had come to realize they must turn their attention away from the Jewish people and toward the Gentile people. This is not only a practical consideration. Paul comes to understand that it is what God had in mind all along, that He would use the Jewish people as His chosen covenant people to bring salvation to the Gentiles, to the ends of the earth. But for what it's worth, Paul is never going to cease to struggle with this. His heart will never release him from his deep felt need to bring his own people, the Jews, to salvation. His main work will remain with the Gentiles. And in chapter 14, he continues that work and hits something of a bump and a bruise. In Iconium, Paul tries to teach a mixed crowd, both Jews and Gentiles, and some of each group believe. But there are lots of dissensions going back and forth between new believers and those who have not believed at all, and Jews and those who are not Jews. And the whole thing gets so fired up that Paul and Barnabas have to flee town to avoid being executed. They go to the neighboring province of Lycaonia. And here in the city of Lystra, they preach to a holy Gentile crowd. And I mean a holy Gentile pagan crowd, not the Jews, and not the kind of Gentiles who are God-fearers, that is, kind of believers in the Jewish God that have been attached to the synagogue that they have preached to before. This is the first time they preach to an entirely pagan Gentile crowd. And Paul notices a lame man in the crowd, and as it turns out, this man has been lame since birth and has never walked a step in his life. And on top of noticing that the man is lame, Paul notices that this man is just soaking up the gospel message, leaning forward, fixed on every word, taking it in. This is perhaps not to be wondered at when you have people who have been marginalized and undervalued for their entire lives, and they learn that there is a God in heaven who really loves them and who really values them. They generally receive this as good news. And this is going to turn out to be better news than the lame man may have expected, because Paul sees his spirit and interrupts his preaching to say to the lame man, "Get up on your feet!" And suddenly he finds the strength he has never had, and he rises to his feet, and for the first time in his life, and he is an adult man, for the first time in his life, he walks. We read that so easily and we don't think about it. What would it be like if you came to your present state in life never having been able to walk a single step, and suddenly in the name of Jesus Christ, you are strengthened and you take your first steps? This is what is known as an impressive miracle. And the people who had known the lame man all his life were duly impressed. Things like this don't happen every day. If they did happen every day, people wouldn't remain lame from birth to adulthood. These guys are not ordinary men. Did you see that? He just said, "Get up and walk." And the lame man got up and walked. Ordinary men can't do that. I bet these guys are gods from heaven come down in human form. I'll bet they're Zeus and Hermes. Remember, this is the first entirely pagan Gentile crowd to which Paul has preached. The potential for misunderstandings is different than the Jewish crowds to which Paul is used to preaching. On the one hand, maybe we could think that this is a more pleasant kind of misunderstanding, because when you get the Jews all out of joint, they are real prone to pick up rocks and throw them at you. These people pick up flowers and throw them at Paul. Let me see. Throw rocks at me. Throw flowers at me. And when they have thrown enough flowers, these people want to rush off and find a cow and bring it back and kill it in honor of Paul. The Jews just wanted to kill Paul. Let me see. Kill me. Kill the cow in my honor with possibly a nice pot roast dinner to follow. You could think that it was a more pleasant kind of misunderstanding, but Paul and Barnabas did not seem to think that. Despite the Ghostbuster brand of advice, when the people called them gods, Paul and Barnabas tore their clothes, which is what a good Jewish person did to indicate grief and outrage in the face of sacrilege and blasphemy. And they ran among the people, wailing, "Why are you doing this? What are you doing? We are only men like you." Paul went on to say a good deal more, all of it important. He summarizes a thread from the Old Testament that we generally miss. Beginning with the sin of Adam and Eve, a barrier went up between God and man. There had been direct fellowship between Creator and creation. No more. The barrier is up. And God reaches across the barrier only now and then, here and there, to covenant with some individual like Noah or Abraham for purposes best known to God, but of which we have come to understand some. The rest of the people on earth go their own way, Paul says. And they've been going their own way for a long time. And they remember, they have this memory of God passed down from their fathers, 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 and on. And they feel deep in their hearts this need to rediscover and get acquainted with the God from whom they have lost contact. And so they try, but with lack of communication, misunderstandings multiply and people go their own way and they localize God. Instead of understanding correctly that He is the God of heavens and earth, He becomes the God of this creek and that hill and those trees. And they multiply God. There is this God and that God and some more gods over there. And they barbarize God. And they perform in His name acts of shame and sin. And Paul says that God allowed this. And that it led to the worship of false gods like Zeus. But that all the while that this was happening, God did not leave Himself without witness, either in heaven or in earth. There have been clues, hints, object lessons in nature and in providence, so that men would be prepared when the gospel of Jesus Christ arrived to turn from all the vain things that going their own way had led them to, and turn again to the true God, the God of heaven and earth, from whom they had been so long separated. This is an important point in the transition from the old covenant to the new, that God chose the descendants of Abraham so that the true knowledge of God would not pass from the earth all these years that people were going their own way. Paul also points out, and they called Paul Hermes, by the way, because according to the Greek pagan legends among the gods, Hermes was the talker, and Paul was the talker. Imagine, the guy who wrote half the New Testament talked a lot. That's why they called him Hermes. Paul points out that so far from being a god, he is possessed of the same sinful nature with all the shortcomings of these people to whom he speaks. I'm no better than you. I don't deserve sacrifice and worship. I am a man of the same nature as you, as King James has it, a man of like passion. We forget this part too, but if you read Romans chapter 7, you will understand that Paul did not think of himself as any great shakes where moral excellence was concerned. He used to, back in the days when he was a Pharisee, he thought that he was a pretty righteous guy. But now that he has seen the righteousness of God in Jesus Christ, he knows that by comparison, his righteousness is filthy rags. He is just another sinner. God is good. Paul says, satisfying hearts with food and gladness and sending needed rain and fruitful seasons. But I don't want you to mistake me for anything like that. I'm just a jerk among all the other jerks. As Paul would have it elsewhere, among sinners, of whom I am chief. Paul makes all these points with ripped clothing and loud protestations and all. And just barely prevents this pagan crowd from offering up the sacrifice that they had in mind. And as in the Ghostbusters scenario, when someone asks you if you're a god and you say no, bad things may follow. The crowd who is prepared to worship Paul is left deflated and confused. And when the Jews from Antioch who have been following Paul show up and begin to badmouth him, those pagans who just a minute ago were ready to throw flowers, put down their flowers and pick up rocks and join the Jews in stoning Paul. And they stone him, at least they think, to death. And they drag his presumed corpse out of town and throw him in a ditch to rot. Oh, how things changed. Just a moment ago, they were going to worship him. Now they have killed him. At least they think. Sound familiar? Whether Paul was dead or just close enough, whether God worked a miracle of resurrection or whether God simply allowed Paul to hang on just enough to life to serve further, Paul got up out of that ditch. And he went back to preaching. He may have been only a human, but he was a stubborn human. What should we take from all of this? Eva Speer, and how many of you know Eva? I know several of you do. Eva Speer once told me a story about a famous preacher in Mexico whom she had gone to listen to, I believe, on the invitation of a sister. It could have been a friend, but I think it was her sister. And the preacher had a name like the prophet or the anointed, something, and talk to Eva and get the details lined back out. But I remember the general story. I'll call him the anointed. The anointed was a big deal, especially among the poor and the marginalized people in the region of Mexico where he preached. When he arrived, they cheered and chanted. And if he looked at them, they swooned. And when he passed, they threw flowers and they threw little folded up letters at his feet, hoping, oh, if only the anointed will pick up my letter and read it, he will see my problem and he will bless me and my life will all be turned around. And they would hold up their babies. Could you please bless my baby? Can't you see him holding up? The thing that stuck in Eva's head was the man's reaction to all this cheering and adulation and appeal. And get Eva, if you know her, get her to tell you sometime, because she can make the face the way I can't. It's a very Latin face. But she said the man turned his head, part in profile, and he extended his hands to the crowd, and you see, Paul would have ripped his clothes up and ran shrieking and wailing and explained to them that he was just a man like they are men and that only God deserves worship. God, who has worked through nature and all human history to make it possible for you at this moment to turn from your vain hopes, like any hopes that you place in an ordinary human being like me, to turn from those vain hopes and come back to him and know him. Because this is the whole game, to know the God from whom we have been so long separated. That's what Paul would have done. We are in the book of Acts now, in the midst of the first missionary journey. In a few years, Paul will help start a Christian congregation in the city of Corinth, and after a while he will write back to those Christians in that congregation he helped found, and he will have a question for them. The question is expressed early and often in the book of 1 Corinthians. What's the problem with you guys? Everybody wants to be the big shot. Don't you realize Jesus Christ is the big shot? None of you are the big shot. What's with all this big shot-itis that you have? We are all just sinners who need to be saved. Unfortunately, we also live in a day of celebrity preachers who are complicit in the idolatry that is thrown their way. And one after another, it seems that preachers who have been put on pedestals are shown to be just sinners like everybody else. If anything else, their sinful nature is exaggerated by having been put on the pedestal, and the cause of the gospel of Jesus Christ suffers needlessly. So here's two pieces of advice for you. Number one, if anyone ever asks you if you're a God, you say no. Number two, if anyone ever asks about your preacher, tell them he's a jerk. At least he's just a sinner, like all other sinners. Actually, here's a more useful way of giving this advice. The minute that things cease to be all about Jesus Christ, the very second that anything that any preacher or congregation or individual Christian does ceases to be about Jesus Christ, the instant that the glory is directed to anyone else but Jesus Christ, the very moment that our hopes are placed in anyone but Jesus Christ, as soon as it isn't all about Jesus Christ, it all goes wrong. The life of this congregation must be about Jesus Christ. The life of the larger church must be about Jesus Christ. Your life as an individual Christian must be about Jesus Christ. And sometimes it's easy to get caught up in a lot of earthly concerns, but it needs to reach the point where everything we say and do, and more everything we think, is really about Jesus Christ. And any glory that arises from our circumstances needs to go to Jesus Christ. And all of our faith and all of our hopes need to be in Jesus Christ. And things will not be right until we are all about Jesus Christ. And it may be that many of us have suffered, as people do, from delusions that we are important. We are just sinners who need to be saved by God's grace through Jesus Christ. If your life has been other, and it's time to make a change, we're going to give you an opportunity. If the question just hasn't occurred to you yet, and suddenly you know that your life should become about Jesus Christ, we're going to give you the opportunity. If you have other business that you need to bring to the Lord, we're going to give you the opportunity. Come now, because in this moment, it is all about Jesus Christ.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.